I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Gators Breakdown. The Gators Fan Podcast. Because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
The Gators Breakdown Podcast is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SCC. And joining me for this episode of Gators Breakdown is former Auburn offensive lineman and SEC Network analyst Cole Kublik. Cole, thank you so much for joining me here on Gators Breakdown. Of course, I follow you on Twitter, and with all the traveling and appearances, you are a busy man right now.
Well, it's that time of year, so you just kind of get used to it and go with it. But, it's fun. Wouldn't trade it for anything. And obviously, hopefully this game's going to continue to get better.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we'll get into the Gators in just a second. But you've been to Gainesville the last 2 weeks for Gator games. How have the trips been for you?
They've been good. They've been real good. You know, I know that staff from when they were at Mississippi State. So it always helps to know those guys and to have an idea of what they're all about, what they expect, and, you know, sort of how they coach. So they're always good to us. Dan's good to us. And, you know, Gainesville's a fun town. Swamp's a special place, man. It's a place that I love going to call a game. I was fortunate enough to play a game there and don't have great memories as far as the outcome goes, but you know, that's just one of those places that you grow up as a kid just wanting to be a part of and wanting to be in. And so I always feel good about being able to be a part of a game there.
No, all right. We're definitely hoping you can get back to the swamp everybody remembers there. So, but before we start breaking down the Gators with Cole, remember you can find Gators Breakdown on newsforjacks.com/GatorsBreakdown. You'll find all the Gators Breakdown episodes as well as articles from the News for Jack sports team. That's newsforjacks.com/GatorsBreakdown. Hey, find us on iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, and also on social media, Twitter, Facebook, at Gators Breakdown. So, Cole, you've been around this Gators team for the last 2 weeks by covering the team for the Saturday night games for SEC Network. Now, competition has a lot to do with it, but we have seen two different-looking Gator teams so far these first 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah, and obviously that has a lot to do with the opponent. And, you know, that's just going to be part of it. But I agree with you to the extent that you had 1 week where it looked pretty good, looked like things were improving, looked like things were going to be rolling, and things were going to be sort of figured out, I guess. And then all of a sudden, week two, things look a lot different. But I don't want to take too much away from Kentucky, and I think they deserve a lot of the credit. I think they deserve to be mentioned as a team that went out and won that football game. I don't think Florida gave them that game by any stretch of the imagination. Now, there are a lot of mistakes that were made, and there are guys that didn't play well, but I think Kentucky earned a victory in that football game. So I think they deserve to have it talked about that way, and there's still talent on this Florida football team. They've got a chance to get things headed in the right direction, but yeah, they had that streak come to an end at home. That's a tough one, especially for a first-year head coach when all the players were hearing about, you know, the streak and the distractions and the outside things surrounding what that game really was.
Cole, just how much work does Dan Mullen have on his hands? And what a lot of people are pointing to after the loss to Kentucky was just the culture of the team. How much does he have to change in taking over for the previous staff? Is this team and program further behind than we'd like to acknowledge?
I think so. And I think if you talk to some of those coaches, you'll get a pretty good idea of just where things are and sort of what they're having to deal with and what the mindset, what the attitude was of that program when this coaching staff arrived. And it's going to be something that's very difficult for those guys to get turned around. You hear some stories about how certain things played out last year and then all of a sudden a new staff comes in. It's a new culture. It's new expectations. It's new ideas and then obviously new fundamentals and things are being taught a different way. I think that's maybe the most surprising part to me that I've heard from multiple members of that staff is just how much teaching that they're having to do of fundamental football, lining up in the stands, you know, basic lifts in the weight room, and expectations of when to be places, how to be places, how to act when you're places. And so I think the learning curve will be bigger because they're having to go so far back and really start so close to the beginning with a lot of these guys just when it comes to a lot of things that are basic fundamental football fundamentals. And that's just, it's a little bit disappointing to hear because I think they have enough talent to have a pretty good football team this year.
And with all that said, Cole, are there things Dan Mullen himself can do better with the short sample size we've seen so far? Yeah, it's only been two games, but are there things that we can point to for him we can't put all of the blame on Jim McElwain, of course, and the previous staff. Are there things Dan Mullen can do better from what we've seen so far?
Well, sure. I think when you look at any coach that calls a game and loses is going to be able to go back and say, well, I wish I could have called this here, or I would have rather called this there. And, you know, if I could have this series back, I think I would have handled it a different way. I would like to have done it this way. So I always think you have that aspect of it. But, you know, I think that there are opportunities that he probably would like to give other guys. I think you look at a Jordan Scarlett only getting five carries in the first half. I'm sure that's something that Dan might want to go back and say, you know, I would like to sort of try and focus in on getting the run game going a little bit earlier. So, but and even for me to say that, so much of it is predicated on what the defense is showing and what was called and maybe what checks are in. So it's easy for us to just sit back here, you know, on a Wednesday and say, yeah, they should have done this or they should have done that. It more comes down to execution than second guessing play calls and things of that nature. But Dan's learning these guys just like these guys are learning Dan and his staff. And it's going to take some time for them to all get on the same page.
Right, Cole Kubik from the SEC Network joining us here on Gators Breakdown. Cole, of course, we know it starts up front, and the Florida offensive line has been much maligned, and for good reason lately. But, you know, you played along the offensive line, of course. So what do you see as some of the main issues that these guys just can't wrap their head around right now?
Well, one of the first things that sticks out to me is the lack of flexibility. You got a couple of guys that just can't bend, and so they're not able to consistently get leverage, and they're not able to consistently be engaged on a defender at the point of attack where they would need. And is there some attitude stuff with a couple guys? Yeah, probably. You know, you look at, I mean, it goes back to what I said about teaching some of the basics and some of the fundamentals. I mean, you got some guys in their pass sets that are still getting their feet together, that are still immediately opening up their hips to the sideline. I mean, I know John Hevesy doesn't teach that. So we can talk about coaching, and you can coach something, and the guy goes in the game and does it a different way. You know, where do you stand? If you don't have a better option from a talent perspective, you got to make a decision. So I think that Juwan Taylor is probably the guy that would stick out that I'd say has been impressive so far, that I've enjoyed watching so far. I think Brett Heggie could be a guy that could give them a bit of a spark from an execution standpoint and maybe from an attitude standpoint. So it's a very odd group. I mean, I think I've been saying for 2.5 years now that they're the most talented offensive line in the league, and a lot of me still sees that. But at some point in time, you almost got to close that door and say, all right, it doesn't really matter how much talent they have. They're not going to be a group that figures it out. And I'm not giving up on them, and I'm not saying that they can't be a group that plays good football, but it's just been a long time since I've seen them play collectively consistent good football. And with the kind of talent that I know what T.J. McCoy has, because I saw him play good ball 2 years ago, I know Fred Johnson has, and I know Martez Ivey has, to just not be able to see them put it together is just frustrating and disappointing. I can imagine what the guys on that staff think and what people who root for Florida Gator football every week think, because they watch it as intently as I do, and I can understand why it's frustrating.
Right, then a fan frustrated sent a question to me, wanted me to ask you about this, and you brought up Martez Ivey, but Billy R. Edwards at Bill Dogs Gator Fan wanted, he goes, what is going on with Ivey? Is it a footwork issue, or is he not understand certain blocking schemes and the new blocking scheme that they've brought in? Because for whatever reason, even with the old staff, he's a 5-star coming in, one of the 2 5-stars Florida has on the roster, but he hasn't really lived up to that billing yet. What seems, from what you've been able to see in the last couple of years of Martez Ivey?
I mean, a little bit of all of it, to be honest with you. I don't think I could just check mark one of those and say, oh, it's his feet, or oh, it's his attitude. It's a little bit of everything. It's just like if you're a good offensive lineman, there's not one thing that makes you good. It's not just your get off. It's not just how hard you play. It's not if you finish on a regular basis. It's every hands, feet, technique, fundamentals, leverage, finishing, attitude, demeanor. That all goes into being a good offensive lineman. So a guy who's struggling, it's not just going to be one thing. But like I said, the basic and technique and fundamentals, especially in his pass sets, are something that's frustrating to watch, because it's a lot of it's kind of elementary stuff. It's day one stuff of taking a professional pass set. You know how to take that kick slide, and not to get your feet together, and not to open your hips up. And you see it happen sometimes, and you just think to yourself, man, he spent enough time on the field to know that that's not how it's done. But I also sometimes think about the fact that you got a guy that's been playing for 2 or 3 years, and this is not just him, this is just any guy, who a new coaching staff comes in and attempts to tell them, hey, you're not doing it right. This is not the way that it's done, but he's been doing it for a while that way and probably had a lot of people telling him he's really good. So I can imagine that mentally that would be difficult for a lot of young men to deal with. And it's now coming in, changing the system a little bit, doing things a different way. Coach is asking different things from you. So it's hard to truly advance when you're learning new things a lot of times. So, I will say this. That coaching staff was very complimentary of the fall camp that he had, and very complimentary of how he's handled himself in practice since the season began. So, to me, that shows that he's still open-minded. He's still willing to accept coaching. He still understands he's got a long way to go. I've talked to some former teammates of his that say that he is a good teammate and that he cares about the game and that light switch is hopefully coming on and he's going to get it. But you still haven't seen him play high-level football very consistently, and that's just what you hope that you can get at some point this season.
Cole, a lot has been made of the mentality of, and especially in the trenches, from what we saw last week against Kentucky, along the offensive line, along the defensive line, or the defensive front seven. And you've played the game, so I'd like to get your thoughts on this, of having a history of being around these type of guys. Can a tougher mentality be taught, or can it get better, or is it what it is at this point? You play the game. I'm sure you've played with or against people who didn't originally have that physical mindset. Do transformations really happen in that regard?
I don't think it can be taught, because I think ultimately you have to want to do it. And if you don't want to do it, you're not going to do it. And it doesn't matter if a coach dog cusses you every day, makes you push the sled every day, it tells you you're a bad human being every day, spits on you, punches you every day. That's not going to make you have that mindset. It just isn't. You either want to do it or you don't. It's either inside of you or it's not. Now, I think certain coaches can do more things or do different things to help get it out of guys that do have it, maybe get it out of them more consistently. And I do think that there stylistically are guys who can get players who maybe don't even have it in them, but can get them to play harder and get them to play maybe a different style of football. But that nasty is just either in you or it's not. And, the expectation that comes with that, it's not always learned. And I think sometimes when you get a guy who comes in from, you know, I kind of going back to what I just said. You have a player that's played one way for 2 or 3 years, and now all of a sudden you have a coach that comes in and says, we're going to do it this way. Well, that sometimes you butt heads on that. It doesn't just work out that way. So, you know, the attitude of this group is something that I know a lot of people question, and you see them on film, and it doesn't always look the way that you want it to. So, can it be taught? I don't really believe so, but I think that certain guys can do a better job of not only getting it out of you, but I think certain guys can do a better job of making you want to do it for them. And, I mean, ultimately, you have to want to do it for yourself. You're going to go out, and you're going to punish guys, you're going to play hard. You're doing that for yourself and your teammates, but there are certain coaches who I think can help you want to go the extra mile because you also want to do it for them. And when you get that, that's when I think it becomes easier to coach and produce a really good offensive line.
All right, Cole, it can't all be negatives here. So, you know, with what we've seen with these Gators. So, you know, what can the Gators do going forward? What are some of the good things you've seen in the last couple of weeks that can have a positive outlook on the season?
Well, I know Felipe Franks didn't look great in the second half, and he made a couple poor decisions, but I really do still believe that, you know, him as a quarterback, the way he handles himself in the pocket has improved. I've seen a lot of things in two games that where I think he would have immediately bailed out on it last year, that he wouldn't have had the kind of patience that he had this year a year ago. He would have tucked the ball and run. He maybe would have tried to fit the ball in some different windows. Now, the second half wasn't indicative of the first half and then the first two halves of the first game, but I do see a progression with him as a college quarterback. And in the new system, that's obviously going to take some time. I think Florida's got great skill. I think Jordan Scarlett, I think they got three really good running backs. And I think the receivers, especially with the transfers, you saw them make an impact week one. And with Van Jefferson and Trayvon Grimes added to what they already had at wide receiver, I think those guys can make plays. So it's going to be an ongoing process of Coach Mullen trying to find a way to get those guys the football and help them be explosive. Defensively, obviously, it's, you know, Todd Grantham knows how to coach defense. No one's going to question that. And that group can be aggressive. That group's fast. They're athletic. But when you see Benny Snell cutting back and getting 8 or 10 yards last weekend, and you go back and really watch it, and you see linebackers that are over-pursuing or linebackers that are focused on taking on offensive linemen instead of playing sound in their gaps, or maybe defensive linemen that are freelancing a little bit and getting out of their gaps and not having gap integrity. And it only takes one or two of those things on defense, and next thing you know, it's an 8-yard play that should have been a no-gain or a 2-yard gain. So I still think that there's enough talent on this team for them to be good. It's just a matter of the lead. I think it comes down to leadership, to be honest with you, because the coaches have had enough time to say this is the expectation, this is what we want. They just need other guys on that team to step up and help guys get in line and help guys do it the way that they need to be doing it to go out and be productive. And then it comes down to execution. It's just want to. How bad do you want it? Like, I go back to DeKeo Spikes, who I played with at Auburn, and I understand that physically he was a different character than maybe anybody who's playing linebacker in college football right now, outside of, you know, 2 or 3 guys. But, I mean, he's a physical freak. But, you know, he used to always say tackling's a mentality. If you want to get a guy on the ground bad enough, then you will. You'll find a way to do it. You'll find a way to get that guy on the ground. And I believe that to an extent. Now, is a guy who's 6'2", 255 pounds with, you know, 6% body fat and a neck that's as wide as his shoulders going to have an easier time doing it? Yeah, he is. I mean, he's a top 10 draft pick for a reason. But I still believe that mentality and that slogan, that statement, that attitude holds true with anybody playing defensive football. So when you see guys missing tackles, you see guys out of position and not able to make tackles, or you see bad effort when they arrive at a ball carrier, you know that those are things that can be turned around. But I don't think Todd Grantham can just go yell at those guys and turn that around. I don't think he can go out there and say, hey, we want you to tackle better. That's a want to. I mean, that just comes down to self-awareness and self-desire.
All right, a couple more here for Cole Kubik before we let him go. Cole, it is and I really doubt, you know, the first 2 weeks have changed expectations for Dan Mullen at Florida. You know, so this is probably going back to a little bit of a preseason look for you. But, you know, long-term expectations for Dan Mullen in Florida, is it the right fit to get this thing turned around?
Yes. I said when Dan Mullen was hired, he'll win a national championship at Florida. I still believe that. And I'm gonna say this again, and this will be a reoccurring theme for me. People need to accept that Kentucky's a pretty good football team. Benny Snell is the second best running back in the SEC. C.J. Conrad's a really good tight end. Terry Wilson is dynamic at quarterback. Drake Jackson is a really good center. Bunchy Stallings is a good guard. Josh Allen's going to be a first-round draft pick at linebacker. Chris Westry and Mike Edwards in that secondary are going to get drafted. They got players, and they have veterans, and they have a lot of guys who played a lot of football and a coaching staff that's been together and understands their football team. So it's just the overreaction to losing that game because it's Kentucky and maybe someone adjusting their expectations of what Dan Mullen's going to do long-term is just flat-out silly. Dan Mullen's going to win a national title, in my opinion. I think he's the right guy for the job. I think he has the right athletic director in there with him that's going to help him be able to do it. So the facilities are coming along. They obviously have the fan base, they have the history, they have the recruiting pool, and I think that, to me, that game Saturday night did not change my opinion at all, that Dan ultimately is going to have a lot of success as the Florida head football coach.
All right, Cole, you mentioned Kentucky and what you like about them. Let's go around the SEC right quick before you let you go. Is it Georgia and still everybody else in the East? You just talked really well about Kentucky. Is it Kentucky that maybe can come up there and surprise the Bulldogs in the least or be their main competition?
No, I don't think so. I don't know if they're deep enough yet to be able to. I mean, could something happen in Kentucky upset Georgia? Yeah, it could happen. I'm not predicting that, but it could. I don't know if Kentucky's deep enough to play the kind of football that they played Saturday night, week in and week out. I mean, one of the more impressive things that Kentucky overcame Saturday night was losing Quinn Bohanna on the interior of that defensive lineman. They only had five to play. You lose your best one, and you had to play a true freshman who's 368 pounds who's probably not ready to be a college football player yet. So, that's where I really thought Florida would attack that defense, and it just didn't happen that way. But I don't think Kentucky is a huge threat to Florida as far as winning the East. If there is another threat, I think it's Missouri. I think Missouri's probably the sleeper in the SEC right now that no one is talking about. I like what I've seen from them. I think they've played good ball. I like their offensive line. Albert O's a stud at tight end. I think they have two capable SEC running backs, good weapons at receiver, and obviously the most NFL-ready quarterback in the SEC. The defense is a little bit ahead of where they were a season ago. And let's be honest, if they're managing the offense a little bit better and they're not as relentless with their pace and their tempo and maybe not as irresponsible with their pace and tempo, the defense isn't going to have to be that much better. They're just going to need to get a couple stops a game. And so the offense doesn't look totally different. It's not like Derek Dooley came in there and tried to overhaul the whole thing. But I do think that he's trying to allow them to be smarter with how they do it, and that's going to ultimately help the defense. So I think you look at Missouri's schedule, they get Georgia at home in 2 weeks, and then you think about if they were to get that game, it doesn't even matter if they lose to Alabama a couple weeks later, and the back end of Missouri's schedule is not that bad. Yeah. It's really not. So I think you look at, once they get past Georgia and Alabama, now they're going to need some help. If that were to happen, and it's somewhat possible, you're going to have a Kentucky get Georgia. Auburn's going to have to get Georgia. I think Georgia's going to have to lose two SEC games. It would obviously help Missouri if they were one of them, because then that allows them to go lose, say, to an Alabama and then be able to go on to win the rest of their games. So the way the schedule plays out, I like it for Missouri. The fact they get Georgia at home, that's big. It's a bit of a contrast style game. But that Georgia secondary is going to make it tough to walk in that Missouri offense. So, in the West, I think Alabama's clearly ahead of everybody else. I think Mississippi State and Auburn right now are probably a coin flip for third best team in the league. Obviously, they for second best in the West as well. I think both those teams, Mississippi State looked really physical against Kansas State, which was impressive. Auburn's D-line, extremely physical against Washington. I think LSU's D-line was the same way against Miami. So we'll learn a lot more about Auburn and LSU this weekend. That'll be a fun game to watch. It'll be a good game. I think it's a bad matchup for both offenses. So I'm expecting a lower scoring game, a closer game. I think home field and quarterback allows Auburn to edge it out, but I don't think it's going to be a blowout by any stretch of the imagination. And I think Ole Miss is a team that's just always going to be able to score points, but they're not a great football team. And they'll get blown out again this weekend because they're not able to play defense and can't get stops. Not much to talk about with Arkansas, but as far as the league goes, that's kind of where I feel everybody stands.
All right, guys and girls, that was Cole Kubik from the SEC Network. Cole, you, like I said, you've been around the program, the Florida program, the last couple of weeks. Nobody could have broke it down better than you just did for these last few minutes. So I can't thank you enough for joining me here on Gators Breakdown.
Hey, I appreciate you having me, and I look forward to doing it again soon.
All right, Cole, thank you very much.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, Florida and Colorado State will meet for the first time on this coming Saturday when the Gators coming off a loss to Kentucky and the Rams fresh off a fourth quarter surge to beat Arkansas 34-27. So the Rams turned that game around after Arkansas scored touchdowns on its first two possessions of the second half to extend a 13-9 halftime lead to 27-9 with 7:28 to play in the third quarter. And Arkansas also led the Rams in total yards, 393 to 164. But from that point on, Colorado State outgained Arkansas 265 yards to 44, including 195 to 16 edge in the fourth quarter, and shut them out the rest of the game for a 34-27 comeback win. And Colorado State gets their first win of the season there. So the Gators have won 17 consecutive games against first-time opponents, a streak that dates all the way back to the 2003 Outback Bowl when Florida lost its first-ever meeting with Michigan. And look, going back to last year, Dan Mullen faced Colorado State defensive coordinator John Jessic last season, as Jessic was the Kentucky's defensive coordinator. And Mullen's Mississippi State offense racked up 441 total yards in a 45-7 win against Kentucky last year when Jessic was the defensive coordinator. So, you know, a lot less talent, of course, on this Colorado State defense compared to last year at Kentucky. But this year so far, the Colorado State defense ranks 124th in the nation in total defense, giving up 555 yards a game in their three games so far. So remember, they kicked off in that week zero against Hawaii. So that's why they have Colorado State has the three games on its schedule right now. They are 116th in scoring defense at 38.3 points per game. Also 116th in the nation in rushing defense, giving up 252 yards a game, all while ranking 110th in passing defense, giving up 298 yards per game. So guys, look, this is a game where Florida needs to score some points. Everyone else has been playing Colorado State and putting points up, and Florida must as well. This is a game where, you know, I think the Gators need to let the running backs get into a groove, take advantage of a really porous rush defense, and let the offensive line prove they can do it versus anyone that's on the schedule. And if they can't do it here, then it really makes you wonder about these guys even more. You know, this game is a must to show this offensive line can do it. No other way around it. Doesn't matter the opponent. Go out there and do it. And also from a game strategy side, like, this isn't a team that should come in here to Gainesville and beat Florida. But if the Gators offense can't stay on the field and gives this potent Colorado State passing game a chance after chance after chance to put up points, there's a good chance they will have given the opportunity. And going to that other side of the ball and what Colorado State can do. I mean, Colorado State's passing offense ranks 10th nationally, averaging 369 yards per game. Now, graduate transfer quarterback K.J. Carter-Samuels ranks 5th in FBS and passing yards per game with 367.3, and 4th in completions per game with 28. So in the second half of last week's win over Arkansas, Carter Samuels completed 22 of 27 for 291 yards and two touchdowns to finish the game 32 of 47, 389 yards, two touchdowns, and one interception against an SEC defense in Arkansas. In the fourth quarter of games this season, in their three games, he's 26 of 37 for 384 yards, 70% completion percentage, 10.38 yards attempt. So every time he throws in the fourth quarter, it's for a first down, three touchdowns, no interceptions. So this is a quarterback that is going to, they're going to come try and sling it around on this Florida secondary. And junior wide receiver Preston Williams, who at one time was a Tennessee Volunteer, he ranks fourth in FBS in receptions per game with 9 and 6 in receiving yards per game with 130.3, has 4 touchdown receptions in 3 games. So, this little pairing here with Carter Samuels and Preston Williams, Florida's going to – look, they're going to have their work cut out for him with Trey Dean getting his first work in. You'll have C.J. Henderson more likely on Preston Williams, and they're going to just – if they'll pair him up and line him up together, we'll just have to see what Todd Grantham can bring to the table here. And Williams is going to be a target. I mean, he's caught 12 passes for 154 yards and 2 touchdowns in the win over Arkansas. Has been over 150 yards in 2 of his first 3 games, 188 versus Hawaii. So, 188 yards receiving. It doesn't matter who you're going up against. That's pretty good. Pretty good there. And Colorado State overall, they've lost to 2 pretty good teams in Hawaii, who's 3-0 in the season right now. Colorado, who's 2-0, a team that just beat Nebraska. And besides the Colorado game, the Rams have shown the ability to come back. The comeback fell short in their first game against Hawaii, but as I mentioned earlier, a great comeback to beat Arkansas last week. So even if Florida gets up, and the secondary will be tested all game. You know, look, the numbers we just threw out there, they're going to come in here. Mike Bobo, the head coach, we know his history at Georgia. He'll take advantage of winning where he can, and they're going to try and come in here into the swamp and test this young Florida secondary and throw the ball. So Florida can't let up. If Florida, like I mentioned, if they get up, no matter how they get up, you can't relax. You can't let up, and the pressure must get to Carter Samuels. So, yeah, this is a good game to get back into the attacking mode on defense. Dictate the play. Don't let it dictate you from the Colorado State side of things. And I still think Grantham needs to bring the pressure and not let Carter Samuels get comfortable. And he must do it all game, especially if Florida can't pull away. Colorado State has proven twice already they can come back. So get up big, but don't get too comfortable here. So, all said and done, given all that, I think Florida bounces back here, gets a win. But it's hard not to see, it's hard to see maybe a big blowout after what we saw last week. I think Franks will probably play okay. Hopefully, after this game, he's still not the leading rusher on the team. I expect the run game to be featured early and often, and Colorado State to be worn down in the second half and keep their offense on the field, off the field. Florida gets this run game going like we thought they could coming into the season. That bodes well for really attesting that Colorado State defense, who is really struggling stopping the run. Get them. It's going to be hot Saturday as well. They're not going to be used to this weather. Like I mentioned earlier, two reasons why this run game needs to get going. First of all, just to prove Florida can do it. Second of all, it's really helping the strategy of this game. I wish I could tell you how the running back rotation would go, but that's anyone's guess right now. In the end, I say this looks like a 37-17, 34-17 Florida win if they bounce back like I think they will. And, if they don't, maybe have another close game on their hands, and it's a passing attack that Florida would need to be ready for. Trey Dean's going to be tested. They're going to try and find a matchup where they can get him at a disadvantage, and we'll see how he responds. I think he'll respond pretty well, but I think a lot of it's really going to be getting David Reese back, getting C.C. Jefferson back, getting one of your leaders in Reese and one of your supposed leaders, Jefferson, but he didn't play in the first two games out there and kind of solidify what's out there and get some continuity on this defense going into the game with Tennessee next week on the road. But having David Reese out there, can help really, I think, control the gaps, make some better tackling, and line up, make everybody line up where they're supposed to be, with the, you know, the general of the defense being on the field. So all in all, I'm looking at a 34-17, 37-17 type of Florida win. Hopefully, much better showing in toughness. It doesn't matter who the opponent is. I think we just all want to see that. It could be playing a peewee team right now. And Florida's got to show more mentality, a tougher mentality, as we've been talking about all week and earlier this episode as well. So that's going to be it there with the preview for Florida, Colorado State. Hopefully, you know, fans show up. I know it's kind of this week's kind of been tough. But all in all, you know, still Gators, and hopefully go out there and see the Gators play in the last home game for 2 weeks now, after with, you know, Tennessee and Mississippi State coming up back to back. And let's take a look around the SEC and what's coming up week three of the SEC schedule. Murray State and Kentucky, that's a nooner kickoff game. Also at noon, UTEP and Tennessee, 2:30. There you go. Kind of interesting game here, especially the way Vanderbilt started the season, blowing out a couple weak opponents, but they travel up to South Bend and take on Notre Dame. So Vanderbilt at Notre Dame at 2:30. That's going to be a good game to keep an eye on. You can start that about an hour and a half before the Gator game kicks off at 4 o'clock. LSU and Auburn, as you just heard Coach Huber talk about earlier, that's the biggest game of the SEC. It's the 3:30 CBS game this week. Number 12, LSU at Auburn. I kind of like Auburn there. You know, Jarrett Stidham and then also that defense there. LSU, you know, still got to see Joe Burrow take that next step at quarterback, and can see there. But I think this will be one of those, you know, hotly contested. You know, kind of just seems every time LSU and Auburn get together is one of those classic knockdown dragouts. And when LSU has a lot of success at Auburn, so it's interesting to see how that takes off there. Colorado State at Florida, that's a 4 o'clock game. Also at 4 o'clock, North Texas at Arkansas. Then 7 o'clock, Alabama and Ole Miss. That game used to be pretty good when Hugh Freeze was back there coaching the Rebels. You know, Ole Miss's offense might can keep this interesting for a little while. But when it's all said and done, of course, Alabama is just going to be way, 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 way too much, because Ole Miss ain't no way they're stopping them. That defense needs some help there. 7:15 night game in between the hedges, Middle Tennessee at Georgia. And then 7:30, you have Mississippi State and Louisiana. 7:30, Texas A&M and Louisiana Monroe. And another interesting game here at 7:30 at night kickoff is Missouri traveling to Purdue. So that's a look around the SEC for week three. So this has been another episode of Gators Breakdown. Thanks for joining me here, guys. And, of course, Cole Kubik joining and giving all his insight of being around the program the last couple of weeks. And really, really enjoy his insight when we can get him here on Gators Breakdown. I'm your host, David Waters of Gators Breakdown. You can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SCC. Guys and girls out there, thanks for listening to this episode of Gators Breakdown.